Generation for Kids. It's our hope that today we will provide you with some tips and strategies that you'll be able to use in your daily activities with students and in your schools. During the call, if you have any questions, please just email them to us at questions@ahaprocess.com. That's questions with an S on the end at ahaprocess.com. And you can do that anytime during the teleseminar. And then when we get to the question and answer period, I'll be happy to pose those to Dr. Conway. And she will do her best to answer them. We have the lines muted because we have a great number of people attending the teleseminar, and otherwise just the background noise is just too much. So for everyone's listening pleasure, we have muted the lines, and just Dr. Conway and myself, I'm Stephanie, and Justin also is on the line. We're from the AHA office. I know everyone's time is valuable and limited, so I'll get right to introducing Dr. Conway. Dr. Heather Conway has been in the field of education and school social work for over 30 years. She has taught in both general and special education and has spent 17 years as a school social worker with the Prince William County Schools in Virginia. She's been widely published and is a sought-after authority on community collaboration, early intervention, and children's rights. Dr. Conway has been an adjunct professor at Eastern Mennonite University and a consultant to Prince William County Schools Comprehensive Child Study Initiative. The first Collaboration for Kids process that she founded, or she founded the very first one. She has presented and trained in schools and around the country, and she's here today to talk with us about helping students who have been unavailable to learn because of situations outside of a school. If you'd like more information after the teleseminar, Dr. Conway is available for consulting and workshops and to help you in your school, and also her books are available on our website. So without further ado, Heather, the floor is yours.
Okay. I'd like to thank you, first of all, for joining me to talk about Collaboration for Kids and the initiative that we have put into action in several places. But I'd like to really begin with two quotes I want you to think about. The first one says, "Education must not simply teach work. It must teach life." And the next one is about challenges, which we are all in the midst of, I am sure. And this one says, "Challenge is a dragon with a gift in its mouth. Tame the dragon, and the gift is yours." We are all aware that there are great challenges in education today. And we also understand that the goal is to do as much as we can to help children in needing success in education and in life. So when we see that struggling student meet his or her challenges and find a measure of success, we've done so because we have met our challenges and we have taken the gift from the dragon's mouth. We've realized a job well done and a student who has met success. And I believe this happens one child at a time. If you've been following the article in Education Week on the quandaries in the reauthorization of ESEA, we all know that somewhere in there, in the ongoing work that they're doing, is the concern that we need to address the whole child in order to elicit maximum learning from that child. And I happen to agree with that. After many, many years as a teacher and a school social worker, I continue to see the dramatic ongoing increase in students who are not learning because of what is going on outside of school. The research has, kind of in an ongoing process, documented the increasing numbers of children across the nation who are not learning because of situations at home. So for our purposes today, and also in the book, we call these children the children who are unavailable to learn. So let's think for a minute about some of these issues outside of school that are making these children unavailable to learn. And I'm sure all of you could make a list a mile long and add to it such things as poverty, child abuse, domestic violence, alcohol or drug addictions in the home, mental health issues at home, chronic health problems, and the list goes on and on and on, as you well know. So how are those manifesting in the classroom? and in the school building. Well, I think one of the most prominent ones that we see immediately, and we call these behaviors, by the way, in the book, we call them red flag behaviors. We see truancy as one of the issues that these students exhibit. We also see patterns of tardiness. We see children with horrible behaviors acting out in school. We see children with drawn behaviors. One of the ones that is coming more and more to the forefront as a red flag behavior is the children's knowledge or conversations about sex and drugs that is inappropriate for the child's age or their stage of development. We see delays in common adaptive behavior skills. Of course, we see lower academic progress than we would like to see. In some of these children, one of the symptoms is an inability to build or maintain appropriate peer or adult relationships, or anxiety, fearfulness, the child who flinches when you come close. Many of these children have an inability to cope with transitions during the school day. Moving from the classroom to lunch is difficult for them, or from the classroom to a special subject. We have the child who sleeps in school, or shows a definite sign of lethargy, or the child who's hungry or comes in with poor hygiene, the child with encopresis and enuresis, unusual toileting habits, or unusual eating patterns or habits, or the child who always wants to go to the nurse's office with a stomach ache or a headache. Those are symptoms that the child may show in school, but what about the parent? Sometimes we see the parent in the community with unusual behaviors, or we may see the parent's lack of interest in the child's basic health or school performance or school needs. I wanted to share with you a couple of little stories of favorite children of mine that I have worked with and have enjoyed. The first one is Abby. Abby was a fifth grader when I knew her. Very good attendance, a delicate little girl, very slight features and beautiful blonde hair from an affluent family. But the thing I noticed is her eyes always appeared sad and she very seldom smiled. She was a hard worker in school, but often was found with her mind wandering. She tended to flinch when children or adults spoke loudly. She brought her lunch every day, which was a fine lunch, but she hardly ate anything during the school day. Abby's grades were sliding downward. She didn't have many friends in the classroom, mostly because she chose to keep to herself. Abby's parents were contacted on several occasions, and no success with that. Finally, they did make themselves available for a conference call by telephone. They said they understood that Abby's grades were slipping, and they agreed to put measures in place at home to address the problem. Her parents both worked for the same high-tech corporation and had very important jobs, and it was clear that their time was very valuable. But it also seemed clear to me that Abby's school situation was not their first priority. Abby had a brother, and Abby's brother was a junior in high school. He often picked her up after school. Abby's teachers got to know him somewhat, and although he seemed caring toward his sister, they were concerned about putting Abby in the car with him because there was some visual evidence that he might be involved with alcohol or drugs. Well, we tried to discuss this with the parents, who became highly offended and denied any such involvement. As the parents began putting pressure on Abby at home, and she began to unravel at school. In the classroom, she appeared to be tired. She complained of stomach aches and headaches. She didn't want to go home after school at the end of the day. She said that home was just too hard. We found out that her brother had been instructed by the parents to see to it that Abby stayed in her room each day after school until they got home at 7 o'clock. Well, Abby grew increasingly anxious, and the parents became increasingly unavailable, to the point that at a child study meeting in the school, the teacher asked that the case be referred to Collaboration for Kids. the good news is that after a great deal of work and a year's involvement with Collaboration for Kids, this situation did resolve, and Abby became a much happier and more participative student. That's just one case. I do have to just tell you about Ronnie first, because Ronnie was quite a young man. He weighed almost 200 pounds. He was a third grade 8-year-old. But he had a heart as big as all outdoors. He was wonderful. Prior to the year that I got familiar with him, he missed 51 days of school. And he was on his way to doing the same thing again when I got to know him. Very sweet-natured most of the time. He was teased a lot by other students. His mother was a single parent, lived with a boyfriend, and wasn't very tolerant of Ronnie's problems. When school officials asked for the fourth time that Ronnie be checked medically, Mom finally took him to a doctor. A very cursory physical exam was completed with no remarkable results, and the mother was given a diet for Ronnie to follow. The mother tried to comply with the diet, but Ronnie, being who he was, resisted the diet and began to hoard candy and cookies and other sweets under his bed, where he could secretly eat all he wanted. Within 2 weeks of the doctor's visit, Ronnie was found unconscious and in a coma on the floor in his bedroom. When hospitalized, the diagnosis of diabetes was made, and he had to remain in the hospital almost 3 months. When he came home, the mom tried to restrict his diet appropriately and give him his various medications. And Ronnie fought that profoundly, found himself back in the hospital. After Ronnie came home the second time, the mother announced that she couldn't manage him, she couldn't get him back to school, and she didn't want him anymore. The family was referred to Collaboration for Kids. These are two examples of the types of children we're addressing today through Collaboration for Kids. Those children who were unavailable to learn due to issues outside of school. You're going to find that as I talk about Collaboration for Kids, I'm going to use the initial CFK. People have done that who have started working the program, and it seems so much easier just to say CFK, so bear with me on that. The Collaboration for Kids initiative, as represented in the book, is a community engagement model, and it's designed to increase academic success for those children we just described, the children who are unavailable to learn. This is accomplished through what I call live action, that is, creating an active network or webbing, if you will, of positive relationships within communities so that human service agencies and schools are all headed in the same direction as a team, together, to serve children and families more efficiently and supportively. Now, since I always meet skepticism with that remark, let me go back and say it again. We're creating an active network or webbing of positive relationships within communities so that human service agencies like social services, mental health, etc., and the schools are all headed in the same direction as a team together to serve children and families more efficiently and supportively. Please bear with me and believe that while I continue to talk. As a side benefit of doing this, it also makes a difference in the work of the human service agencies and the teachers, and a positive difference in the communities. It does work, so stick with me. CFK is a research-based, data-driven initiative. It is not a quick-fix program. It's a long-term initiative aimed at long-term results. A family can stay with CFK team for as long as needed, and sometimes we mean 3 or 4 years. Most of these problems did not happen overnight, will not be fixed overnight. Many of them are generational, as you know. The CFK team process is also being used successfully and regularly as a Tier 2 and a Tier 3 RTI intervention. A little bit of history. When I started this initiative in Prince William County 11 years ago, it was designed for children birth through grade 5. I felt that the earlier we could reach these children and their families, the better. It began in just 3 elementary schools in Prince William, and it now serves over 85 schools and impacts over 2,000 children and their families each year in that county. Of interest, I believe, is that Collaboration for Kids has also been successful in the past 3 years. Prince William County, with over 75,000 students, now we're looking at the Menominee Indian School District in Wisconsin, where there's 1 elementary, 1 middle, and 1 high school. The point being that this initiative can easily flex to any size school district, any area, or culture. Each CFK initiative is designed to take into account the needs and the individual situation of each school district and community, no two being exactly alike. Over the years, the Collaboration for Kids concepts have grown and developed and expanded to now serve middle and high school populations, with the high school model being adapted to meet the needs of that age group. With the high school level initiative, a community coach is added to the team, and with the support of the community coach, the student expands his or her thinking through exposure to new ideas and experiences, and through keeping a planning my future type notebook. I'll talk to you more about the high school in just a minute. You've heard me refer to the CFK team, so let me explain just what that is. A CFK team consists of a school administrator, a guidance counselor, and or a school social worker, possibly a teacher, and representatives from community human service agencies such as social services, mental health, juvenile probation, cooperative extension if you have a land-grant university, parks and recreation, your domestic violence coalition, your health department, a parenting program, or others, however your community is structured to serve people. They are all trained together in the same CFK process and ideas. And when I say this, I always hear somebody say, all those people sitting at one table and working together, it's never going to happen. But it does happen, and it happens with great success, because the key is collaboration. Now, I have had many people laugh about that, because historically, community collaboration has a very bad name. Most people don't understand the concept at all. It is not a natural process to collaborate. Collaboration is a learned skill. And we teach that skill in the training process with the goal of community engagement in the lives of children for the sake of the future of the community. At the end of the 2 days of training, the participating members get it. They understand it. They understand that they've had to make a shift in thinking that has to take place in order to make a difference. And they understand that they must truly engage, think outside of the box for progress to happen. So some old thinking must be left behind at training, and new thinking must embed as people work together through the training process. By the end of that training, new commitment has arisen, and teams are ready to move forward together with a passion to make a difference together. How do the agencies do this? Well, the agencies actually commit in-kind services, and this service time is committed to CFK so that their trained person is able to meet with the team in the school for 3 hours each week. This time benefits the agencies also because of the casework that's done there and the child and the communication with the child and the family. And the team members from other agencies that they are communicating with. So now the teams are ready to work in the school. Now that we have a team, you need to know the process. First, I think you need to know that the most important member of the team hasn't even been invited to join yet. And if you haven't guessed yet, that would be the parent or parents. In each and every single case referred, we invite the parent to be a team member. And as the parent gains confidence in the team process, we ask the parent to be the team leader, to guide us through the important issues they're experiencing and the decision-making and possible changes that need to happen for their child or children. And during this process, team members are supports and guides, and so very important, they are good listeners. How is the family referred to the team? This happens when a teacher or administrator or an agency participant makes a referral because they see issues, and of course, because the student is not making adequate academic progress. These issues are manifesting in school through things that we talked about earlier, truancy, negative or withdrawn behavior, sleeping in school, and so forth. And we mentioned all those earlier. Of course, the academic progress issue is primary. This CFK referral is made after other modifications and adaptations have been tried without success. And these modifications and adaptations need to be documented by the school as they occur. CFK is not the first line of defense. So we need all of that documentation to know what has gone on before. A specific process of engaging the parent takes place, and during that time, all the paperwork and permissions are signed and explained, and a team meeting date and time are set. A specific CFK meeting format takes place in every single meeting. Each person on the team has a role, and all team members put into effect the listening procedures that are taught during training. The feeling continues throughout that the parent is a part of that team, and the parent begins his or her story or observations on what might be impacting the child or the family. As you all probably have experienced, often the story comes out from the parent in bits and pieces over time. Sometimes it even comes out upside down and backwards, but the team members have been trained in putting things together and listening carefully. So they are able to put some semblance of order to the story in their own minds. School staff members offer how they're seeing the child in school, using positive attributes first. Supportive of the parent, team members begin to identify ways they might be of assistance and services they know about that might be helpful. And all of these are set out on the table without edicts. The team encourages the parent to choose where he or she would like to begin. And that's a very important concept. We're not saying, in order to fix this, you must do that. We're allowing the parent to choose a beginning place. A family action plan is written during this first meeting, documenting the parent's choices. And the parent may only choose one thing the first time, but by the second or third meeting, we have a list of things the parent is willing to work on. And team members sign up to support certain pieces of that action plan. Before the parent leaves the first meeting, the next meeting date is set to evaluate progress, determine if the action plan needs adjusting, if something needs to be taken off or new action added. Now the ongoing CFK process is in motion and can continue as long as needed. Following each meeting and while taking the necessary actions listed on the family action plan, the parent has coaches from the team who check in, offer help and support where needed. We know, we're aware that lasting change for families can be slow. Families may take 3 steps forward and then 1 or 2 backwards. But even with that, change is taking place, and much is accomplished over the long haul. Now, that's pretty much describing CFK birth through middle school. It's important to note that when a child is taken into CFK, all of their siblings, regardless of their age, are considered in CFK also and reap the same benefits. I said I'd come back to the question, what does CFK look like in the high school? And that entirely depends on the school district, as we cater to each school district individually. One example on this level is the one I'm working with now in Wisconsin, with the Menominee Indian School District. We still have a CFK team approach, but the team looks different. It consists of an administrator, a school social worker or guidance counselor, a team facilitator, a community coach, and the student. That's right, the student. We're offering the team to the student rather than the parent. We do get parent permission for this. The student is encouraged to be a team member and told that he or she will have a community coach as a support person. So where are these coaches coming from? Once again, we're involved here with the community engagement model as we recruit and train coaches from the community to work with the student and the CFK process. Of course, every coach has a background check. In the Menominee community, we have elders and others who have volunteered to coach. In larger communities, we often recruit from businesses that have a commitment to community service projects. Throughout the time the student works with the CFK, the student will also be establishing a personal notebook of important life documentation. Important papers like their birth certificate or a copy of their driver's license. They can draw and write about their hopes and their dreams and their plans and steps to take to move forward in his or her life. The community coach will help monitor this notebook and will offer time and experiences the students will need to see a larger picture for him or herself. In this picture is always the importance of education as a major step to get where you want to go. Reaching beyond where the student is now to where he or she might like to be. One problem we have come up against and that we work with very closely is that we have found that many students on the high school level have no vision of the future, and they just live day to day in the same pattern, the old tyranny of the moment type thinking that keeps them stuck. They don't allow themselves to dream, and many of them don't know how to dream or utilize a positive imagination to create what's needed to build a future story. One example of that I ran into recently when a team was just beginning to work at the high school level with a young man who clearly had no idea how to think beyond the day. He said that his biggest dream for his future was to have enough money for cigarettes and beer and to have a pretty girlfriend. But then he said he had no idea how to make that happen. And my friends, he was completely serious. The team works to change that. One of the biggest challenges in high school is getting the student to attend school regularly, and it is a major goal of the team to help the student back to school attendance as a habit, to help the student remove the roadblocks that he or she sees that may be there, and to guide them to dream a future that makes school worthwhile. In other words, what we're doing is we're helping students to create hope. There are times on this level that a student may reveal something that indicates the participation of one of the community agencies might be helpful or mandatory. And that decision is made between the student and the facilitator of the team with a great deal of support in place for that student. With all of this information now, let me just take a moment to talk about documentable outcomes of collaboration for kids. One of the largest outcomes has been reduced and corrected truancy. We have raised student achievement as proven on standardized test measures. We've increased student confidence, and we have empowered parents. Increasing teacher time in the classroom has been a major accomplishment. By increasing good behaviors in the school, we've increased that teaching time. We've reduced poverty levels of families and stabilized homes, provided more efficient use of community services. We have lowered juvenile court cases. The numbers in the courts have gone down. And we've refocused the community on stabilization of their children and youth, and we've engaged the community toward the growth of its future. These primary outcomes of CFK are critical to the well-being of children, families, and community, but I feel equally important is the fact that I've seen the lives and thinking of those professionals and citizens who become involved with CFK change and grow. These are more subtle, I admit. These outcomes are much more subtle, but they're important too. And they should not be ignored because they also travel into the future and impact everyone. I have seen professionals in community turmoil turn into positive relationships, and I've seen bored professionals with flat affects turn into passion and caring. I've seen the growth of new kinds of both listening and communication, and I've seen people of all ages, backgrounds, and beliefs come together for the children and make an enormous collaborative difference. Tiny bit about the book right now. If you'll bear with me. If you have some curiosity at this point, learning a little about the book may help. First of all, the book offers mental models of just how the initiative works, and these mental models have proven to be very valuable. And after becoming familiar with them, training participants have come together and created their own CFK mental models. And during the training for the Menominee Indian School District, the people who participated in that training designed their own mental model, and they saw it as a dream catcher and a safety net for their children. In Shenandoah Valley, they designed a mental model that included their beautiful surrounding mountains. It was wonderful. They placed the children on top of those mountains holding hands as representatives of the collaborative entities that were going to help. The mental models historically have solidified the collaborative process for each of the communities. Also in the book is the suggestion for making a glossary of common language. We know from agency to agency, school to school, language is a deterrent in many cases because when you say one word, it may mean something else to someone else. So we ask that they put together a professional glossary of common language. There's a step-by-step process for that, and there's a step-by-step process just to begin the CFK. There are sample letters in the book. There are handouts. There are forms. There are proving points in the book and how-tos for maintaining statistics that are very, very simple to do and very clear. There's a disc in the back of every book so that the forms can be downloaded and modified to fit each individual initiative. There are case examples with actions taken. There are suggested readings to encourage forward progress and enthusiasm. At the beginning of each chapter, there's a quote that should be taken very seriously. And at the end of each chapter, there are forward actions that can be taken to ensure success. I need to tell you the book was written as a positive action on behalf of children in the hope that others would see collaboration for kids as a hope-building mechanism to make a difference. When I started the actual initiative 11 years ago, I did so as kind of an ambitious adventure, hoping that someone in my own community would listen and see what could be accomplished with the creation of real relationships and creative and positive communication. I have to tell you, some laughed, some sneered, some doubted. Of course, mostly it was my boss that laughed. But after I had my own three schools involved, he didn't realize that I had a request from 21 other schools, and the word had gotten out that success was happening. My boss became one of our biggest supporters of the time and the community outreach that it took to serve those 21 schools. Now in that district, as I said before, more than 80 schools are participating, preschool through high school, and almost all of our community agencies are proactive. Wherever Collaboration for Kids exists, one of the biggest supporters are the juvenile court judges, and I need to mention that again. We have reports that their caseload in the juvenile courts has diminished as a result of the work we're doing. And I think that's a great endorsement, as well as the data. Before we close, just let me tell you for a moment about some of the very recent data that's come in from the Menominee Indian School District in Wisconsin. We have had 26 pilot students participating in CFK in just one elementary school. And we've measured both student and family outcomes for this year. And rather than going into too much detail, let me just share some of the basics with you. Of those students with attendance issues, 23 of the 26 have corrected their truancy. 21 of the 26 had behavior referrals for outlandish behaviors, and 21 of those have been corrected. Of the 15 students with medical or mental health issues, every student has had medical treatment or is receiving ongoing treatment. The information on standardized test scores is quite interesting. 24 of the 26 students have raised their test scores. 6 students raised their test scores between 1 and 10 points. 15 students have raised their test scores between 11 and 25 points, and 3 of the students raised their test scores between 26 and 32 points. As far as working on the goals of family stabilization for these 26 students, our teams have placed all parents who have needed mental health, medical, or AODA treatment with the proper professionals. All families with basic needs have had those met. Child protection and domestic violence issues that were reported in some families have all been addressed and appropriate actions taken to protect the victim. These results have also built confidence and positive relationships between parents and the schools, and have increased parent participation in each child's educational process. I need to tell you that of these 26 students, we have also impacted 63 siblings and 65 classmates. So that's 154 students positively impacted as a result of the initial 26. So we're talking here about community engagement, parent empowerment, knowing and practicing the skill of collaboration, the learned skill of collaboration, building positive relationships, and we're talking about offering hope. So engaging, empowering, knowing, practicing, building, offering, those are all action words to build hope. So let me close by reminding you of the initial two quotes that I gave you. Education must not simply teach work, it must teach life. The other quote was, challenge is a dragon with a gift in its mouth. Tame the dragon and the gift is yours. I also want to add my favorite quote, the one that started me out on this project originally. If we are to reach real peace in the world, we shall have to begin with the children. I'm open to any questions you may have.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Heather. Our first question is, who funds the CFK approach training in our facilitator in the season of district budget cuts while schools are losing teaching staff and nonprofits are facing state and federal cuts in the millions?
Well, we have had several sources of funding depending on where we go. I need to clarify two different veins of support here. For the training itself, so far, school districts have been funding the training. In one case, we did have school districts and community agencies putting grant funds together. Under ARRA, I have also had funding for training. The important thing here is the cost of implementation is almost nothing. And that, to me, is the important thing, because when you get the initial training, you want to sustain without a huge expense, and I think that's really important. You have in-kind services from agencies, and you have staff already in the schools. So the continuing implementation is not a large cost.
Okay, great. And also, I just want to remind folks that if you've got any questions, to send them to us at questions@ahaprocess.com. And let's see. I don't have any other questions right at this moment, Heather. I don't know if you've got any other anecdotes or anything for us.
Well, I wanted to say a little more about the characteristics of collaboration, because it's always a question mark whether agencies and schools will work together truly collaboratively. And during the training, one of the things we decide on is a single goal, because if we're going to collaborate, we need a single understood goal. And the whole group needs to understand that the goal is the overall well-being of children and the stabilization of families. No one can really argue with a goal like that. We have to have people who are willing to transition their thinking. And oftentimes when people come into training, they don't realize they're going to have to do that. So there is a whole process we go through, activities and various things during the training, so that that will happen, so that over the 2 days, thinking will transition. The atmosphere is informal. There's lots of discussion. And for the first time, I think members of various entities truly listen to each other without hidden agendas, which is really important. I've had several interesting experiences in that respect, and one of them was with the Menominee Indian School District. I was handed tobacco prior to going in to do the training, and I had no idea what that tobacco was for. And the superintendent, who is Native American, certainly understood that I had no idea what that was for, and he kind of gave me a chuckle and said, I'll take you to somebody who will tell you about that. And he introduced me to two amazing Indian women with the Culture Commission, and he asked them to explain the tobacco to me. And they did. They said, this gives you a direct connection to our Creator, and what you say today will have some influence from our Creator. And about 2 seconds before I was to speak, someone handed me a note with my name on it that said, no white programs here. So I was starting with mixed feelings. The Creator wasn't quite there yet. Anyway, I got up to speak and very quickly realized that everyone I was looking at had a completely straight face, no expression at all, and really had no hope for this succeeding. By the end of the second day, we were in tears. We were hugging each other. They realized the importance of what they were about to do. So in training, we often meet people who are skeptical. It does end. It does end, and they cooperate fully. We find that with collaboration that is real, leadership is flexible. We can criticize constructively. We can discuss ideas openly, and the group can examine the way it's operating. How are they operating within themselves? So the collaboration process in itself is truly a learned thing that people learn together as they begin to communicate.
Heather, I've got another question that's come in, and someone is wondering how closely related this is to the Circles Initiative.
It isn't related to the Circles Initiative. It's complementary to that. It is not related because it is happening in the schools and agencies as a community action. But it is separate. It's certainly complementary to that. Let's see.
That's the only question, other question that I've got right now. I don't know if you've got anything else to add.
Only that I feel that Collaboration for Kids is doing a miraculous job at bringing communities together. And by bringing the communities together for the children reap the benefit. And certainly I am happy to receive emails or answer any questions that come up as time goes on, and would be happy with any one-on-one communication people would like to give.
I know lots of times, if this happens to anyone else, but it often happens to me where, you know, I go through a program like this, and then, you know, an hour later I think, oh, I should have asked such and such. So, yes, please, those of you who are listening, if you come up with questions, please continue to send them to questions@ahaprocess.com, and we will forward them on to Heather and make sure that you get the information that you need. And unless we've got any other questions, which doesn't look like we've got right now, I just want to thank you so much, Heather, for sharing all this information with us. It's just, it's really invigorating. CFK is such an important program, so thank you for sharing this with us today. Did you have any last words you wanted to add?
Please, when thinking about Collaboration for Kids and what you've heard today, remember the quotes. Remember what our challenges are. And as you face the challenges, face them positively. And let us help in any way possible.
Great. Thank you. And thank you all for attending today. We know that your time is very valuable, we appreciate you taking out the time to listen. And we hope that this information was helpful. And if we can help in any way, please do contact us. Thank you so much, Heather. Thank you, Justin. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Bye-bye, everyone.